Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Janna Valabha Girivardhari, Gopi Janna Valabha Girivardhari, Gopi Janna Valabha Girivardhari, Gopi Janna Valabha. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana, 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 Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana,
Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana,
Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana, Jaya
Munatira
Vasudevaya.
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Creation of the Fourth Order, Chapter 11, Swayambhuva Manu advises Dhruva Maharaj, Text 2.
Sandhyamana etasmin maya guyaka nirmita kshipram vineshur vidura Klesha Gyano Dayeyata Sandhiyamana Etasmin Maya Guhyaka Nirmita Kshipram Dineshur Vidura Klesha Gyano Dayeyata Sandhiyamana Etasmin Maya Guhyaka Nirmita Kshipram Vineshu Vidura Klesha Gyano Dayeyata.
Sandhiyamana Etasmin Maya Guhyaka Nirmita Kshipram Vineshu Vidura Klesha Gyano Dayeyata.
Word for word, sandhiyamane,
sandhiyamane,
while joining to his bow,
while joining to his bow,
etasmin,
etasmin,
this Narayanastra,
this Narayanastra,
maya,
maya,
the illusions,
the illusions,
guhyaka,
guhyaka,
nirmita,
nirmita,
created by the yakshas,
created by the yakshas,
kshipram,
kshipram,
very soon,
very soon,
vineshu,
vineshu,
were destroyed,
destroyed,
vidura,
vidura,
o vidura,
o vidura,
Klesha,
Klesha,
illusory pains and pleasures,
illusory pains and pleasures,
Jnana Udaye,
Jnana Udaye,
upon the arising of knowledge,
upon the arising of knowledge,
Yuta,
Yuta,
just as. Translation: as soon as Dhruva Maharaj joined the Narayanastra arrow to his bow, the illusion created by the yakshas was immediately vanquished, just as all material pains and pleasures are vanquished when one becomes fully cognizant of the self. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Krishna is like the sun, and Maya, or the illusory energy of Krishna, is like darkness. Darkness means absence of light. Similarly, Maya means absence of Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness and Maya are always there side by side. As soon as there is awakening of Krishna consciousness, all the illusory pains and pleasures of material existence are vanquished. Mayam itam tarantite. Constant chanting of the Mahamantra will keep us always aloof from the illusory energy of Maya.
Om Ajnana Tmirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapad Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padam, Sahagana Lalita, Shri Vishakhanvitam Shtra. He Krishna Karuna Sindho, Dina Bandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tapta Kanchana Gorangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Pancha Kalpa Turubhyashcha, Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha, Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Sandhiyamana etasmin maya guhyaka nirmita kshipram vineshur vidura desha jnano dayayata. Maitreya Muni speaking to Vidura is giving an example to explain how the illusions that the Yakshas created were destroyed by Dhruva Maharaj joining the Narayanastra to his bow. Analogies or examples are when you use a familiar thing to compare to something that's not familiar, so that you can better understand the thing that's not familiar. If I tell you that I went to Arizona. You may not have been to Arizona before. Have you been to Arizona? Okay. So you've been to Arizona. I've not been there. So you could say that, oh, Arizona is like, it's something like Florida. It's hot. There's some places that have sand like here and there. It's dry and hot. So northern Florida is like that also. Oh, I'm familiar with northern Florida, so now because of your example, I can understand Arizona. In the same way, Vidura may not have been able to understand the way in which, by just simply joining the arrow to his bow, all the illusions of the Yakshas were destroyed. Therefore, Maitreya, knowing Vidura's qualification, gave an example of something that would be very familiar to Vidura. What is that? The way that transcendental knowledge relieves us from all material pains and pleasures. Oh, like that? Vidura understands that because he's a qualified transcendentalist. This example illustrates the high level of consciousness of Vidura, that Maitreya would be able to give such an example. If you use this example to someone who's never practiced Krishna consciousness, they'll be, what are you talking about? I don't understand the point. Such an example is meant for a highly qualified person. And we encounter Srila Prabhupada's purports. He gives the examples which were given by the Acharyas in different places. And sometimes the examples themselves are very confusing to us. To try to illustrate a point, for example, they'll say that Lord Chaitanya was so transcendentally potent, his association for a single moment turned everyone into a devotee, just like the touchstone turns base metal into gold. And we're thinking, what's the touchstone? This example is lost on us because we're not qualified. We don't know what is the touchstone that turns base metal into gold. We're not familiar with that thing. At least I was not familiar with it. Perhaps you knew about it. But when I read that, I'm like, what is this thing? So we have to qualify ourselves to get the most out of the Vedic literature, which is full of such examples and culturally specific points. What's happening is that Dhruva's brother Uttama went out to hunting. This is after Dhruva became king. Maharaj Uttanapad took sannyas. Then Dhruva became king. After some time, his brother Uttama went out hunting, which is common in the Kshatriya rulership families. The brother of the king went out hunting, and he was ambushed and killed by some yakshas. Dhruva, he decided to attack the yakshas. There are different reasons for this. Some of them are authorized, and some of them are due to this pastime, are because of Dhruva getting angry. Would you like to use a mat? It's feeling bad for you on the hardwood. On one hand, it was authorized that Dhruva would avenge the death of his brother, because if any citizen dies in a kingdom, it's the king's responsibility to enforce the rule of law. There are criminals, murderers, they have to be punished. So Dhruva, in that aspect, he was justified in his decision to attack the yakshas. But on the other hand, his motivation was, again, this is for the sake of pastime, we have to understand Dhruva is not an ordinary soul. But he got angry. And it was on the bodily platform of life because it was his brother. So there will be mixed reactions because of these two reasons for the fight. One reason is good, one reason is not good. So you'll get a good reaction and a not good reaction also. Dhruva went to the city of Alakapuri, which is the headquarters of the yakshas, and blew his conch shell. Then the yakshas came out of the city to where Dhruva was and began to attack him. Dhruva fought back, shooting 3 arrows at a time. The yakshas were actually appreciating Dhruva's power. They glorified him. Wow. And in response, they shot 6 arrows at a time. They covered Dhruva the way that a cloud covers the sun, which means that a cloud actually doesn't cover the sun. It appears to cover the sun, but actually it's covering us. So Dhruva then emerged from that shower of arrows and destroyed every yaksha in sight, cut off their heads. Their limbs were separated from their bodies. They were all dressed with opulent helmets made of gold and jewels. And those fancy, priceless treasures fell on the ground. Prabhupada explained in his purport that it appears that in Vedic times, the warriors would always come dressed in opulent armor and jewelry for battle, and that when the enemy was killed, the winner would get to take that jewelry home as a prize, and that this would be a motivation to keep fighting. After having slew all the yakshas, Dhruva was talking with his charioteer, and he said, we never know what the yakshas are going to do next. And as soon as he said that, the skies darkened, and lightning and thunder began. And it began to rain, but that rain had blood, pus, stool, urine, marrow, and all other obnoxious things were falling from the sky. There was a giant mountain that appeared in the sky, and from it, huge stones were falling down. Dhruva could hear the sound of the ocean coming right at him. All these terrifying things were going on. But when, in that moment when Dhruva was disturbed in mind, great sages appeared and advised Dhruva, Autana paro bhagavangstava sharangadangva devakshinot vanatari haro vipakshan yan namadheyam abhidhaya nishamya chadha lokon jasata ratidustaramanga mrityum. All the sages said, Dear Dhruva, O son of King Uttanapad, may the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Sharanga Dhanva, who relieves the distresses of his devotees, may he kill your threatening enemies. The holy name of the Lord is as powerful as the Lord himself, Yannamadheyam. Therefore, simply by chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord, many men can be fully protected from fierce death without difficulty. Thus a devotee is saved. They advised Dhruva that let the Lord destroy these yakshas, and you just take shelter of the holy name. That's how a devotee takes his protection. That was their blessing. That's the last verse of the previous chapter. And Dhruva then performed achman, took up his arrow, the Narayanastra, which was an arrow he received from Lord Vishnu personally. And he touched this arrow to his bow, and all of the illusions were destroyed. So, again, we're faced with this dynamic thing, this situation, which can be interpreted in more than one way. Dhruva was just told by the sages to chant the holy name. And what did he do? He picked up the arrow, put it on his bow. So on one hand, it can be understood that Dhruva just didn't do what they said to do. He didn't chant the holy name. He picked up the weapon and started to get ready to fight again. But, on another hand, he did, actually, because he did achman. You can't do achman without chanting the holy names. That's a fact. Om Keshavaya Namah, Om Narayanaya Namah, Om Madhavaya Namah. And there's a whole string of names of the Lord to say during the performance of achman. And also we understand that in Vedic times, these mystical arrows generally had mantras to accompany them. You would say a certain mantra to invoke a fire weapon or a tornado weapon, like that. So he was chanting the holy names. And so we have this same kind of details. When we consider it, we can understand that there will be an outcome which is not... It's not simply one outcome. It's going to be a dynamic, complicated scenario which is coming up. Okay. In Prabhupada's purport, he explains about how Krishna is the sun and Maya is darkness. And he says that Maya is Krishna's illusory energy. So the sun actually is, it destroys darkness, but at the same time, when it hits something, it creates a shadow. So Krishna, if there is Krishna consciousness, there is no Maya. Absolutely. It's like if I have my hand toward the light, the side of the hand which is facing the light is, there's no darkness there. But the side which is turned away, it's in shadow. Krishna gives us free will. We can be in light when we turn to Krishna. And if we're not, if we turn away, we'll be in darkness. Someone can be Krishna conscious at one moment, and at another moment, it can get covered. Spiritual life is very, it's dynamic. It requires a commitment at every moment. It's consciousness. Consciousness is eternal, so our Krishna consciousness has to also be every moment. We want to be done with things. But we can't be done with Krishna consciousness. We just have to be who we are. Because if we're done with Krishna consciousness, then we're not ourselves anymore. The nature of the soul is Krishna consciousness. We don't want to be done with the nature of the soul. It's an ongoing thing. We want to get there, and that is, that can seem like an accomplishment that happens in time. Before I wasn't Krishna conscious, now I am Krishna conscious. That's good when we're in the bodily concept of life. We're so conditioned to think in terms of past and future that it's good that we think that in the future let me be Krishna conscious. But when we have the opportunity in front of us, when the pure devotee comes, when we have been given service, when we're doing our chanting, when we're doing our service, then it's time to change our understanding of reality and lose this time concept. It's not required. Because then, at that moment, it's Krishna consciousness now. I'm chanting, I'm serving the sadhus here. If we're still holding on to a mental construct that, then we won't be paying attention to our service. Have you ever had someone serve you prasadam inattentively? Means you bring your plate, you have subji, and they throw the cake upside down on top of the dal and subji. They're just not paying attention to what they're doing. Maybe you've done it.
Yeah.
Have you ever accidentally put the, just like, oh, and then you realize what you've done. That oh moment, we should try to be in that moment all the time. Oh. That consciousness. The nature of the soul. In the course of devotional service, if we can be conscious, then everything is perfect. Otherwise, we fall into the trap of Niyamagraha again and again and again. Both sides of it. Niyamagraha means following the rules and regulations without understanding the essence mechanically. And then it also means not following the rules and regulations and acting whimsically. being attentive to our service means that I've got an opportunity now to revive my dormant Krishna consciousness. And here's how. Whether I'm chanting or I'm serving, it is a means by which I can become conscious. There's no pain in that state. There's no problem. Something will happen in the body that you have to react to. You still have to eat when you're Krishna conscious. You still have to sleep when you're Krishna conscious. You still have to go to work. But it's not a problem unless you're afraid of it. Unless you're afraid to go to work. I don't want to go to work. Why? Because you want something else. You want some material thing. That's why there's misery. If all you wanted was Krishna, then it doesn't matter that you go to work. It doesn't matter that I have to get up at 4 in the morning and do the arti. Because Krishna's in the arti also. If all I want is Krishna, he's in the shower, he's in the cold shower at 4 a.m. But our problem is we want something else. We think that in the future, if I get that, I'll be happy. That is Maya. The illusion that I'll be happy in the future if I get something else. But Krishna is now, right now, he's there. We get pulled out of this state of consciousness again and again, and that's why Prabhupada again and again reminds us of the simple points. You're not your body. You're the eternal servant of Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna, and you'll revive your dormant Krishna consciousness. He says here, constant chanting of the Maha Mantra will keep us always aloof from the illusory energy of the world. How many times have we heard it? Telling us, because how many times have we forgotten it? So, because we're sometimes Krishna conscious and sometimes forgetting Krishna, we will experience mixed reactions, just like Dhruva's experiencing, going to experience a mixed reaction here. He's going to continue fighting. But because he's ultimately, he wants to please the Lord. He'll go back to that. He'll go back to his Krishna consciousness. And when Swayambhuva Manu comes down and tells him to stop fighting, he'll stop. Because he's obedient. Dina in Krishna consciousness is not a problem. To be in a imperfect condition, that's not the problem. Dumbha is the problem. To think that it's okay to be, to have ulterior motives, to not really care about being Krishna conscious, that's cheating. That's the one thing that we have to make sure we don't let into our heart. There's a difference between being fallen and thinking it's okay to be fallen. Dhruva may make some choices which he'll be chastised for. But he accepts the authority. Apichet sudrachara apachate mamananyapa sadhur eva samantavya. How's the last line?
Samyag
vyavasito visa. Because his determination is correct, he's to be considered a sadhu. So that's a third dimension. First, we said that on one hand, his choice to kill all the yakshas was justified materially, that he's a king and he has to punish the criminal. This is a second type, and the other reason, the reason it wasn't good was because it was motivated by anger on the bodily platform. That's not good. Right? But there's even a second transcendental reason why what Dhruva Maharaj is doing is good. Because Dhruva is a sadhu. So he's giving us the example. We learn by his example. Arjuna's becoming bewildered on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is good for us. We can't imitate Dhruva, we can't imitate Arjuna. They are pure devotees. So whatever experiences they go through are directly conducted by Krishna. Okay. So what are we meant to take from this? That there's always an opportunity to choose Krishna consciousness. There's always the risk of losing Krishna consciousness. The arrow of Dhruva Maharaj is his weapon against illusion. The Hare Krishna mantra is our weapon against illusion. Dhruva received his weapon from Krishna, we received our weapon from Krishna. You have something to share or ask?
Thank you.
I don't think it was very nice, but thank you.
Actually, the same analogy I was reading somewhere. Some people ask, God is all good, why do so many bad things happen on this world? How can God be all good? So that a nice analogy, similar analogy. The sun is there. So when we are facing the sun, we are in light. There's no question of, there's no shadow. But the moment we turn back, then there is shadow. So similarly, it is the free will that you are telling.
Yeah.
That makes, that results in suffering, turning away or back.
That's right. They'll usually make the argument, though, about someone who, from their point of view, didn't have free will. They'll give an example of why is a baby born with cancer? What did the baby do? So you have to be able to explain to them how that baby chose What would you say?
That's a fact, so there must be a reason behind it. You can't change that. But if it is all random, or it's all
we have to be able to explain in terms of karma and reincarnation. They need to understand that there's reincarnation at that point. That's why the Judeo-Christian traditions, they get confused on this point. It means Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, they all get confused on this point. Or the example Prabhupada gives, why is one man born rich, one man born poor? They get confused on this point because they don't understand that before this life there was another life, and in that life you were sinful. Therefore, if you do abortions in this life, you are aborted in your next life. No one is innocent in the world. They think that innocent people are suffering. No one is innocent. If the person is saying it, and the way, but the way to speak about this depends on the person who's asking the question. If the person is personally suffering from something like this, like their child has cancer, you don't just say, oh, he was sinful in his last life. Don't do it. Please. Listen to them and wait until they have some faith in you, some trust, some respect. And if they can come to a point where they're submissive, then only can you share the truth. Such a truth. Otherwise, it'll push them away. If someone is just asking theoretically, then it's all right. It becomes fashionable to ask this question, why do bad things happen to good people? Because it has become a popular notion. And so we're able to answer for such people very quickly and easily on the point of transmigration of the soul. I said so many different points in this class, and they were a little disjointed. Do you have any questions about
them? I was just thinking, in one sense, the sages told them to chant the holy names.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of the instructions. Sorry. But at the same time, I don't know, like they also told him to take shelter of the Lord, right?
They told him, let the Lord kill your enemies.
Right. So he was using the Narayana Astra, which was being given by the Lord, so it's absolute level. Like just like Arjuna fought him. Of course, Krishna only said they are already killed, but Arjuna, still he did it.
Yeah.
But of course, the Lord was personally instructing here. I don't know, I mean, as you were telling, it might be it's also due to some other reasons, mixed reasons.
Yeah, exactly. And therefore, he can be justified in his choice on one hand, and on another hand, what he's doing is also not correct. So Bhagavatam is not always going to be super simple, cut and dry. One answer is correct. There will be levels of correctness.
I have one question related to that. So the sages told him to take shelter of the Lord. So how does one take shelter of the Lord? What is
they
it
told mean? Him to chant the holy names.
So what does it mean to, it's also heard many times, needs to take shelter of the holy names. So what does it mean?
It's chant the holy names and hear. That's all. And that's actually all. If we're chanting and doing something else, that's not taking shelter of the holy names. Just chanting and hearing, that's sufficient. everything comes from that.
You can't change the situation, so you can try to plot the, I guess, sentimental platform, emotional platform, taking shelter of the Lord.
Emotions will come, sentiments will come naturally, but we can't force that. That would be artificial. Krishna blesses us with deeper understanding, Swarup Siddhi, everything, but that comes by His mercy. Our role is to chant in here.
But Srila Prabhupada also said we have to be like a child crying for its mother.
Yeah, so when the child is crying for his mother, is he also categorizing his library? Is he also watching TV? No, he's just crying. One pointed attention. That's sufficient. It's an inner mood. We shouldn't disturb others with our japa. That's not what's meant by crying like a child. Our japa shouldn't be. It shouldn't disturb others. That's pretty important. Because the devotees don't like, it'll be a problem. I remember when I gave this example, this excuse, when I was first coming to Mangalarti, I was chanting, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare. And Shamrupa Prabhu kindly one day said, I think you should chant more quietly. And I said, but Prabhupada says you should chant like a child crying for his mother. And that's true, but you should chant more quietly. We shouldn't disturb the devotees. Anyway, a child isn't faking it. I was faking it. We should chant as attentively as possible. That's all. One time Prabhupada said, chant like a child crying for his mother. How many times did he say, just chant in here? Many times. Someone asked Prabhupada, what should I think of when I chant? He said, chanting is thinking. That's how we take shelter of the Lord. Just like if I watch a movie, I'm fully watching the movie, that's taking shelter of the movie. If I'm eating, if I'm taking prasad with complete attention, that's taking shelter of prasad. We can have good shelter or bad shelter, but the process of taking shelter means to be 100% absorbed in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. To understand it, that this is the only thing that matters right now. Is that okay? Thank you. Thank you for putting up with the class. I think there's a lot to be desired. There's a lot to be desired from this class. A lot that I should have done better.
Oh, no problem. I mean, it's very good. Thank you. So many wonderful points.
Thank you very much. Guru Dharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.